Your questions. How are we doing for time? We're about 20 minutes. Before we normally finish by 6, so let's take 20 minutes, have some Q&A. If you have to go, don't be embarrassed. Nobody's going to be offended if you need to go. It's optional extra tonight, Q&A time, but we normally hang around and have some fellowship afterwards. Do stay if you can. But let's open it up to some questions. If you weren't here this morning, feel free to ask questions, but I may just say get the tape. So if you've got a question, there's no stupid questions, no dumb questions apart from the ones that don't get asked. Yes, sir, and please give us your name and welcome.
Right, I've got a similar experience to your friend Stuart. I used to be slim and blonde, and I waited, you know. Then I got angry. So this is just a word of encouragement before my question. And my hair fell out, my belly got fat, and the Valentine's card started
coming. I can't relate at all, I'm sorry.
Sure, yeah. So the Valentine's Day card...
Something about the hair going down to the belly, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the hair weighs a lot.
Yeah. So one Valentine's Day, I prayed, you know, an angry prayer to the Lord. Lord, where is she? I've waited. And then, couldn't I communicate with my wife? Well, that same day, I got emailed by the lady that would become my wife, who emailed a brother that's got the same name as me. She was in the States, and I didn't know it was an answer to prayer straight away. But this is where my question comes in. You see, her family, she's the daughter of a pastor. He's an Arminian, unfortunately, but he's a pastor nonetheless. And good family. And I got saved at 15 from a non-Christian background. My dad's an alcoholic. My mom was a serial adulterer. You know, they're just consistent in their non-belief. So you said, you know, when we're looking for a spouse, that we you know, get to know them, get to know their family. But that, you know, we're evangelical Christians, you know, God saves us. You know, that's not that important, do you think, you know, getting to know the family, you know?
Respectfully, I disagree that it is important to get to know the family generally. I think when you marry someone, you are taking on a commitment to not only them, but also to their parents. Hear me out. If anyone doesn't take care of the members of his own household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Fast forwards a number of years in your life, and if you don't take care of your parents, you've denied the faith, and you're worse than an unbeliever. Your wife, who marries into your family, is marrying into a commitment to look after your parents one day. She's also marrying into a commitment to put up with whatever trouble comes along with marrying you and your family, for better, for worse. That's what she said on the wedding day, hopefully. And I would be the last pastor on the planet to say, don't do that. How do you know if you're going to save your family? I mean, if she's going to have an influence on your family. You are not bound by your history. You are not bound to reproduce the same patterns that your parents walked in. So I wouldn't be the last pastor on the planet to say, "Well, don't marry this faithful, committed, godly, trustworthy Christian because his dad's an alcoholic and his mum's a serial adulterer." However, I would say meet the family. Because you ought to know what you're getting into. Go in with your eyes open, not your eyes closed. And so I think people can be unrealistic about how willing some people are just to lie. Lies don't unravel except in the presence of contrary information. And when you're marrying someone you don't know, from a background that you don't know, you've got to dig and dig and dig. Because unless that person comes with a huge track record and a long history, Very often in London, when people move churches and so on, it's like, I want to marry this guy. What do you know about him? Zilch. Slow down, get to know him, find out what do the friends say, what does the pastor say, what's the church, what do they, go and visit their church for a few months, you know, trust, find out about them and their friends and their family and their history, and see if it adds up. I mean, people lie to you, tragically, and people travel between churches in order to lie to people. That's the world we live in. Sorry. To this side of the floor. So, brother, I've forgotten your name.
I don't know if I said that, actually. You did ask me to. Stephen.
Stephen, welcome. Great question.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yes. Bobby at the back.
Hey, Tom. So you mentioned during your sermon, one of our responsibilities is to be patiently proactive. What does that look like for both men and women?
Thank you. Under which setting, under marriage or singleness, patiently proactive. Yeah, so I mean, I kind of copped out because I ran out of time, and there's just so much to say about that. Patiently proactive. Well, I mean, come on, I boiled it down to 86 people available in London. I mean, hopefully I am dead wrong. Okay. However. If you back up and you say, well, under my statistics, if you back up and say, well, look, I'm prepared to compromise on attractiveness. Let me prioritize godly characteristics, and then I've got the figures down to several hundred people. I want to find somebody. But let's say you've patiently and proactively got to know the people within your own church, you've taken time, can I use the word gone on dates with them? Without people misunderstanding me, I don't believe you should go on a romantic date and sit opposite someone with a rose in the middle and then go home to their place afterwards. But guys, girls, I mean, there's nothing sinful about talking to someone from the opposite sex. How else are you going to decide whether you want to marry that person or not? How are you going to evaluate their character? How are you going to get to know them? And so, and people have to be willing to actually go and meet with someone and get to know them. And can you call that a date? Can I have a compromise where you don't throttle me afterwards for my use of the word date? And I don't mean what the world means by dating, or even what worldly Christians mean by dating. I'm going to say, let's call it getting to know you dates, where you get to know someone. Just go and hang out. Preferably with others. Hang out with others. But then you really want to get to talk to that person, go and have a coffee in a public place or fruit juice in a public place and talk to them. Ask your married friends to invite you both round and for dinner, and you know, go to somebody's house together. Set it up, and you just like we're gonna just chat in company. We're gonna chat on our own. We're gonna find out about this person. That's like proactive, isn't it? You're not swiping left. You're not going, I like the look of that guy. I don't like the look of this guy. Swipe. Let's get it out. It's discarded. That's the Tinder generation. That's a tragedy. I knew nothing about it till the other week. Started searching about online dating, but people do treat other people like that. Discarded in their minds. Like that person in your church who believes the same things about you, who you know, just doesn't look quite the way you thought you would expect someone to look, that you were going to marry. And so you've mentally discarded them. You won't even take the time to get to know them. That person, by the way, that person could be, and I'm going to say this, in our church there are so many, my wife and I are always saying this to each other, there are so many lovely young people who are godly and wanting to pursue God, and we just kind of bang our heads against the wall because you think, well, why have they all discarded each other? All right, okay, I can't make you. We're not into matchmaking. I don't believe you, the experts can't do it. I don't believe I can do it. But I'd love it if you just talk to each other. I mean, maybe you'll find out that that other person who you mentally discarded long ago because they don't meet your, you know, it's not 6'2" and handsome and dark haired, you know, I wanted someone taller than me kind of attitude. Maybe you'll find out that that person has qualities that when you get to know them, make them more and more and more attractive to you. By the way, can I say this? Let's be realistic about marriage. The person you marry tomorrow is going to become physically less and less and less attractive as the years go by. And that's realistic. And that's from Romans chapter 8. I read it to you earlier. We are in bondage to decay. Paul uses the word in 1 Corinthians 15, phartos. You want a good Greek word to memorize. Memorize the word phartos. It means decomposing. How are you today? Decomposing nicely, thank you. That's the answer. That's real. That's real, isn't it? Meanwhile, Romans 8, Paul says, meanwhile, we groan. And believe me, the longer you live, the more you groan. Gravity wins in the end. Okay, your joints are going to ache, your belly's going to fall, your skin's going to sag, you're going to wrinkle, you're going to bald. It happens. The person you marry, even if you marry them as a supermodel, they don't stay as a supermodel. And eventually, gravity and decomposition wins. So, all right, well, how high on the list? Do you want a long, happy marriage? Do you want a marriage where your attraction for that person grows and grows and grows as their hair goes and goes and goes? Or as they go grey and as they sag and as they fail and as you groan together, as you grow old together? Do you want to grow old and be old and in love more and more and more? Marry for personality. Marry for godliness. Don't marry for looks. I'm saying that because I wish I could slap some of you. Seriously, because you're like, yeah, but it just doesn't attract me. I mean, I look at that person, it doesn't attract me. You don't know them. If you could see what we can see as pastors, and, you know, we look at people and we think, wow, what a potential. I mean, I'm setting myself up as a relationship expert. I'm not, but I just look at it and I think, you guys have got so much potential, and sometimes you ignore that, don't you? Realistics also says, look, I need sanctification. So you look at someone else and you see, oh, well, they need sanctification. Well, yeah, but so do you. So have they got the spirit? Have they demonstrated growth and sanctification? You're not marrying someone who's perfect. You're marrying someone who's on the road, hopefully, of sanctification. So all of those things. I think being proactive really means making effort. Our friend Dr. Montoya at the seminary would say to seminary students who said, will you pray for me to find a wife? He'd say, are you dating women? And if they said no, he said, well, no, I won't pray for you until you're meeting with people, because I'm not going to pray that God just plops someone out of the sky. Now, I get his point, but I also remember Stuart. I get his point, but I remember how God answered our prayer. And I also think sometimes, you know, I think if I was back then, I would have said, knowing what I know now, I would have said, look, visit some other churches. You know, I mean, there are Bible teaching churches that want to pursue holiness, and that may not believe exactly what we believe on every point. But how specific are you going to be? How specific do you want to be? How specific is your own theology worked out? Have you thought about going to the Banner of Youth Conference and meeting young people there? Have you thought about you know, going and visiting as a special event on at another church, go to it, make the effort, go be proactive. So that's kind of what I mean. I mean, if you're not meeting people, if you're not getting to know people, if you're not inviting people over and showing hospitality, what are you doing? That's what I think. Now, you could say, I'm praying, and I'm waiting for Sandra to be dropped out of the sky. And I would say, well, God can do that. I'm not gonna say you're doing the wrong thing. Now, one thing I would say, being proactive does not mean stopping serving in the church until I find a wife. You know, that's kind of like stupid. You know, I'm not gonna do what God has commanded me to do until He gives me what I'm asking Him to give me. Since when does that work with a holy God? No, just be faithful, serve in your church, pray, grow in godliness, work on yourself, to quote that other pastor that I don't want to name, become the person that the person you're looking for is looking for, work on your own character, be realistic about that, but then trust the Lord. Don't give up doing the things that you should do in order to go after the thing that you want. Bobby, does that answer your prayer? A prayer. Bobby's already married to the girl of his dreams. Okay, to answer your question, I'm not in the business of answering prayers, I'm sorry. I'm just tired. Yes? Okay, right, we'll go for it. Yeah, you choose. You got the mic, go for it. Lord Kojo George Felix, I do. Who said I do?
Yes, I did. 6 years ago, actually.
6 years ago. Yes, congratulations. Yeah,
thank you. So, I think your first point was take a realistic view of yourself. So I just wanted to ask, what advice would you give to a godly young person, but who doesn't have some of the features that are socially seen as attractive? So maybe, you did mention, I think, like bad breath and stuff, and obviously there's that stuff to cure that. But,
yeah.
But stuff that generally society would see as like defects, which can't really be, I don't know, changed.
Face like the back of a bus is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, you said it. So,
okay.
What advice would you give to that person? You know, they
be realistic.
Yeah. Okay.
Be realistic. You may have to go and weep on your own if you accept the reality that, you know, okay, look, this is the body that God has given me. This is the face that God has given me. And I recognize that most people will never find this attractive and that most people are going to ignore me. That's a painful, painful thing to have to accept. But, you know, if you'd been badly burned as a child and scarred from head to foot, that's a reality that you have to learn to live with and move on, don't you? And you have to accept that, you know, some of us are born in one end of the what most people consider attractive spectrum. And other people, we look at them, the supermodels, they're born at the other end. And it's genetics. And you've got to accept who God has made you. And you've got to say, God, you've allowed me to be like this for a reason. And you will maybe, you know, relate to the words of the Apostle Paul, you know, meanwhile we groan. But, you know, is God able to find you someone? Be realistic about who you are. And I've wanted to say to some people, and I have said this to some people, it's been very hard for them to hear, I know. I've said to some people who have maybe social skills problems, or they've got some area of failure in terms of sin in their life that makes them very, that they're not dealing with, and very un, appealing to someone. You know, you got to say, look, is it wrong for someone like that to want to be married? No, it's not wrong to want to be married. But if you're going to want to be married, you've got to be thinking in terms of, let's say you're, I'm trying to think of an example that doesn't incriminate me. Let's say you're incredibly irresponsible with money. Let's say you're incredibly irresponsible with money. And you've just, you've had money come into your hands and you've just blown it. You've made really, really foolish choices. Let's say you're a young man and you thought you'd start one business and then you thought you'd start another business and I'm going to do great and you've just time after time after time, you've given a track record of foolish irresponsibility that stands out like a label attached to you. Danger, do not marry this man. This man will lead you through a lifestyle of up and down and up and down and up and down and it's just foolish irresponsibility. Well, if you're that man, is it wrong for you to want to get married? Well, I'd say you should really deal with that. But if you do want to get married, you'll find someone who's willing to take the risk and come with you as you are and not lie to them. You ought to be saying to someone, look, this is my track record and I'm working with the Lord and I'm going to work. But you ought to be honest. You ought to be kind of, if someone was willing to marry you, you ought to be just falling on your knees and thanking them and kissing their feet. You know, it's just like, that's such a problem that you ought to be very willing to take their, be grateful for someone's willingness to go with that. Now, I would extend that backwards, and you just apply it in 100 different ways. My point was just be realistic and accept the fact, if it's a, let's say it was a burn and you got terribly scarred, you just accept the fact, this is the way God has made me. I'm not going to expect someone to look at me and find me, you know, dazzlingly attractive. But if I get to know someone and they can look past it all, praise God. I'm going to say that on the other side of that, you know, you see someone who has been, who has maybe had to put up with struggles from birth onwards. If you see someone who's learned to deal with that, if you see someone who's grown in sanctification through that and has become a godly person through that, you're seeing a remarkable person. And beauty is only skin deep. And beauty is deceptive, deceitful and charms vain. And I got that wrong, didn't I? But you know what I mean? That the reality is you could be marrying a remarkable person by choosing to marry someone who's on the face of it unattractive to many people. So I would say to someone in those circumstances, look, pray for the right person to come along. Be realistic that makes it a lot harder for you to find someone, and be patient. And if the Lord calls upon you to suffer in this life with nobody wanting to marry you, accept it cheerfully from his good hand as your loving heavenly Father, who would never give you a trial to bear that he didn't have a good purpose in. Why would God allow you or anyone to suffer an indignity like being burned and terribly scarred? But he does. Why would God allow you to be born not looking like a supermodel? But he does. He does that for all of us. And we're all on that spectrum, unless you happen to be a supermodel. And for those people who are, usually it's a trial beyond words, but that's another matter. I don't know if that answers your question. Does it adequately answer your question? Yeah, you know, swallowing it may be the most painful, most humbling, and most useful moment in your life. It's a bit like Job. You know, why have you done this to me? Why have you killed all my family and taken away all my goods? And Job didn't know what was going on, but he bowed himself before the Lord and said, "Naked I came from the womb, and naked I shall return. You know, I came with nothing. I'm going to leave with nothing." He said, the Bible says, Job 1:22, "In all this, Job sinned not, in that he did not accuse God of wrongdoing." And he bowed in his pain and trouble, and he worshipped God. You know, that's the most profound moment in somebody's life, when you come to trust God like that. That changes you. You'll never be the same again. If you focus on being useful, you might just, in the process, become an incredibly attractive person to someone else who's looking for that. But that's another matter. Yes, Francis, two questions. Go for it.
Hi, Tom.
Hello. I don't know your name. I'm sorry.
My name is Chris. Well, for those that don't know me, my name is Chris.
Chris,
I spoke with you.
We have spoken.
A couple of weeks ago. So I'm from Los Angeles. It's not really a question. It's more of a statement. I want to explain a little bit of my story. We just got married, and I came from Los Angeles. So, I mean, I could be a testimony for a lot of people that are trying to find somebody. So, I came from Los Angeles. Me and her kind of met randomly. So when you say that it doesn't fall out of the sky, I think it kind of does sometimes. I think it just depends on the plan. And what it taught me is I'm not really in control. And so we met through a friend, and a friend was praying for her on the steps of one of my friend's houses. And I came up the stairs. And so she said, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. So I've been coming back and forth to London for probably about 8 months. And we got married. And you are tested, because through the process, there's a lot of things that have to do with the journey that you have to fight for it, for the relationship with each other, because, you know, you have the back and forth thing, you have visa processes, you have a lot of different things that come along with trying to be with another person in another country. So I think with relationships, me and her weren't the type that go out too often. So I was more of a bachelor. I stayed, you know, when I was with friends, most of the time I stayed in the house, and she was the same. So the fact that she stayed in the house and I stayed in the house, the chance of us meeting somebody is very, very, we talked about probabilities earlier.
God had to work really hard, or some angels had to do some intervention.
The probabilities of us meeting was almost, I would say, almost impossible. And nobody knows me in here, so I was the type that said that I would never get married. Never. It was never going to happen. My mom was even, I mean, my whole family was shocked when I brought her to the house and, you know, she met my family, everybody. So most of my family, everybody, people still now, they're very shocked, because I wasn't the type that said that I was going to get married and I wanted to, you know, find somebody to spend the rest of my life, but I was actually the opposite.
Yeah, so, and thank you for that. And I really appreciate the testimony. Again, it's similar to my friend Stuart. You're praying, and God can overrule our lack of proactivity.
Right.
But I don't want to allow the example I gave of prayer and God, you know, you would say remarkably moving someone in response to prayer, or in your case, a remarkable, the world would call it coincidence, and you say no.
Well, I did pray.
The Lord, yeah, so you're praying, and God brought you two together. I don't want to allow that to remove the reality that the Bible says God is sovereign, we must pray, we must trust him, But God in his word requires us again and again to take responsible steps to achieve normal means. Abraham could have just stayed at home and kept everything normal and said, you know, I'm just going to pray for a wife to come visit. No, he sent his servant to look for a wife for his son Isaac. And there's a reasonable means to achieve a godly outcome. And I would say to someone in your situation, if I were counseling you when you were staying at home, I'd say, get with it, brother. Go visit some churches.
It's called being proactive.
And start being proactive. But, you know, God can overrule our lack of proactivity in answer to our prayers. And he's merciful and gracious. So, yeah, great point. Thank you. And someone else had a question as well. Oh, your wife had a question. Well, don't ignore your wife's question.
It's not actually a question. I just wanted to add to your point in regards to the priorities.
Yeah.
As someone who was single for a very long time, I think that is a very key statement that you made, because I will speak from when I was single. My list of the things that I wanted, other than a godly man and an ambitious man, you know, and all those type of things, but in terms of looks and, you know, he needs to be from this place, this background, and a lot of things that narrowed down my search.
You were looking for a 6'2", blonde,
yes,
blue-eyed...
You know, a list of so
rugby
many...
Rugby player, okay.
A list of so many things. So I think my encouragement to people that are waiting and people that are looking for a spouse is to be very aware of that. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, you have the things that you love and the things that you are looking for, but I honestly believe, with no shadow of a doubt, that we met the way we met because God had to have his hand in the way we met.
Mm.
Because had we met in person, it would not have happened. I'm not saying he's a bad looking man, but in my mind, I'm just saying I was so fixed. You know, I think my point is I was so fixed, I would not move for anybody. Even my married friends, my colleagues at work, you know, would encourage me, you know, you need to be a little bit more open. You know, but I was so fixed on the background, on where he would come from and, you know, what kind of things and, you know, a lot of things that when I look back would have hindered me from having a godly man and a good man.
That is so helpful. Thank you, sister. What's your name again?
Millie. Yes.
Thank you. There's another Millie sitting next to you. Yes. How random is that?
So just that.
So thank you, because that's why we preach this. I mean, that's why I took time to go through the implications in a sermon like this, because we've got to think that through, haven't we? And it's really important not to get stuck with fixed ideas about these different criteria and just unnecessarily exclude people that could be, when you get to know them, the person that you would like to marry. Yes, your name and question.
My name is Lauren, and I wanted to ask, is it wise to spend time praying for or let our hearts be set towards marriage when it's not promised? And like when Paul says that it's better to remain single, or should we be joyfully expecting and like looking towards singleness more so?
Okay. Is it right to be praying for marriage when Paul says it's better to be single? I would back up and say, if you're someone who's praying for marriage, you're probably not gifted for singleness. If you really want to be married, if that's your desire, I think one of the definitions of someone who's gifted for singleness is they could live without it happily for the sake of the Lord. Now, some people maybe it's like ambivalent. Yeah, I could marry. I could enjoy marriage. But, you know, for the sake of serving the Lord, I can let that go. I want to just give myself to serving the Lord. They're gifted. They're capable of doing that. And there are other people who, you know, that would be, oh Lord, don't make me, please don't make me live the single life, you know, as if God is wanting to curse you with singleness. No, it's a gift, not a curse. And now there are people, let's be honest, many people, many Christians, godly, mature, lovely Christians who feel like they're cursed with singleness. Why? Because they want to be married. They really want to be married, but they haven't found anyone yet. That's why I'm taking time to unfold a verse like this morning and unfold the implications this evening to say, guys, sometimes it's because you're not, you know, you're discounting people unnecessarily and all of that. But singleness, for those people, I reassured someone the other day that the verse I read to you earlier in Romans chapter 8 about God not sparing his own one and only son, his only begotten son, but freely giving him up for us all. What's that verse go like? It goes like this. And if God did not spare his one and only son, but freely gave him up for us all, how much more will he not also with him freely give us all things? Okay? This is the heart of God in black and white on paper for you. If God didn't spare, he didn't hold back, he didn't keep back his own son, but sent Jesus to the cross to die to have you, do you not think that he would give you one of his other sons, one of his other children to be your husband, if that is good for you, if that's right for you? Now maybe, just maybe, you'll be called upon to suffer in this life. Maybe, just maybe, circumstances are changing and it's better for you in God. God knows it's better for you to be single. And he's not answering those prayers because God knows what's better for you. Maybe God just wants you to wait. There's a whole different lot of maybes, aren't there? But you've got to know that normal is God created men and women to be married. That's what God chose. He said it's not good for the man to be alone. And if that's a good gift, and you're asking your heavenly Father for a good gift, which is in accordance with his will. By the way, you can pray with confidence over something like marriage, because you know that it's normally his will for people to be married. I mean, it's like, please, Lord, I want to be married, but am I asking according to your will? You don't know the secret will of God, but you know the revealed will of God. And you know that normally, yes, it's normal to be married. So you can pray with confidence and trust, not my will, but yours be done. If you know better, Lord, okay, I'll live a godly single life. I'll pursue serving you as a single in the meantime. But it's not wrong to ask God to be married and to be praying and seeking it. I think someone who's really gifted with singleness would just not be asking that question. Does that make sense? Have I answered your question? Because I'm tired and it's the end of a very long week and a very long day. Did answer your question. Wonderful. Can you remind me of your name? Sorry. Lauren. Welcome, Lauren. Welcome to those of you who are new tonight, those of you who just joined us. Welcome. We're done. We've finished today's sermon earlier. We've finished the Q&A now. I would just invite you to stay, enjoy some fellowship, a few refreshments over here, help yourself. But Wednesday night, we'll continue here and around the city in different people's homes. We'll continue the discussion. There's a lot to discuss here, isn't there? Particularly those areas, you know, what are our responsibilities in terms of prayer and sanctification? What does it look like to be proactive and pursue patient wisdom within a marriage where you're struggling because of this myth of the perfect match being out there when it's not.